This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. As we cover a lot of different things around the Umpqua Valley going into the holidays. And Sarah Wickersham, Executive Director of Douglas Cares, thanks for coming in.
Hi, Kyle. Pleasure to be here.
So, holiday season. For some people, it is all fun and joy and a lot of good stuff. But for some people, depending on their life experience, it's a tough time. And I imagine that is kind of the case for some of your folks.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We at Douglas Cares know that the holidays can be challenging for people, especially when they don't have enough money or they don't have people to help with the childcare. This is a time that should be happy and joyful and bright, but we're all getting a little bit pinched right now with financial changes and with inflation and things like that, and that just adds a lot of stress. If you already have low financial resources and low resources in terms of family and people who care for you and can jump in and help when things are struggling, those are times when families are likely to lash out in anger and potentially hurt those that they love the most.
So, and maybe just at the front end, explain, if people aren't familiar, most people are, about who the folks are that you're helping.
Douglas Cares helps with the investigations for child abuse and neglect in Douglas County. So when investigators go out, there's a police and child welfare. They do the lion's share of this work. They go out into the homes of the families and they start investigations. And then they call us in to do some expert evidence gathering. So we do forensic interviews and forensic medical exams to kind of see if we can determine the extent of the injury or the damage that was caused, and then we give that evidence back to the investigators, and they make the determinations on the case.
And what's the age range of the kids you work with?
We care for kids 0 to 18, typically. We will and have cared for some older, some young adults who have some developmental delays and disabilities, and so that our setting is a little more comfortable for them than a typical adult setting.
So are there extra concerns during the holiday season?
Yeah, there are. School lets out, well, I guess today is the last day of school for many folks in the county who are still in school, and they'll be home for about 2 weeks. That means mom and dad are responsible for all the meals when they used to have two meals covered at school. It means mom and dad are, or other caregivers, often it's grandparents or aunts and uncles or any other caregivers, have to cover all of the supervision needs of kids. They have to be there 24/7 to make sure the kids are safe and healthy, and with the added stress of not having the money to provide a Christmas that they'd like to provide, it can be really stressful and challenging.
Now, and I don't know if there's a way, if this is even data that would be kept, but do instances of abuse sometimes go up during the holidays?
From our records, yes, we get more referrals right after breaks. So the kids have been home for 2 weeks, no school to help, no other outside of school activities, no extra food. When they come back into school in the new year, that's when teachers, who are the most common mandated reporters, will notice things like bruises or signs of neglect or other injuries, or their kids are telling them that something happened. And then we get an uptick of referrals over to Douglas Cares.
So, I mean, that's got to be tough to deal with this time of year in the midst of all this, what is supposed to be happiness.
Yeah, it really can be for my staff, and most importantly for the families that we serve. As I've said many times on this program, most of the cases of abuse that we see are families struggling to get by, who are at the end of their rope and they lash out in anger, and they can and should be coached through that and helped and given more resources and brought back to where they want to be. most of the families we deal with love their children and want to be strong, whole families.
So what are some of the things you do to help them that way, to kind of coach them back in a better direction?
Yeah, we have an advocate that's assigned to the family from the minute the referral gets to us. And that advocate helps with resource coordination, helps make sure that they've got enough food, that they can kind of access transportation. It helps coordinate some childcare options if they need them. And then we refer them over to our mental health side of the agency, where the whole family can get long-term care. If they need parenting coaching or things like that, everybody can get therapy. Every member of the family can get therapy through our agency. And we do some limited parenting classes and things like that if that's the problem. Most commonly, what we see is that we got to figure out the resources, and then we can dig into the family coaching and things like that.
Do you find that a lot of these families, this has been like a multi-generational cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. And with physical abuse, multi-generational is very common, but it's a lot easier to interrupt physical abuse in that cycle with a generation. So when we see a kid who's being hit by a parent who was raised with physical discipline, from a grandparent who was raised with physical discipline, and on down the line, when we interact with that family at that stage, we can help show them what that causes and what it doesn't work for. And it's a lot easier to interrupt that cycle. When we have generational sex abuse, that is a lot more challenging. And all of my comments around families under stress and in pain and facing a lot of challenges do not extend to child sex abuse. Those things are much difficult to treat. They're much more difficult to treat out of the abuser. And we find that cycle is much more difficult to interrupt as well.
And I would imagine if a child has dealt with this pattern for, you know, maybe their whole life, you know, in waves or whatever, that it's got to be, depression has got to be kind of a real thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of lifetime impacts from physical abuse and sexual abuse and even neglect that we see show up in kids adults years after the trauma is over. Most of those really do respond to treatment, but there are some lingering effects, some lingering challenges and wariness that kind of get embedded in there that are a lot that tend to last forever for those of us who experience that kind of abuse.
And for your staff, what kind of training gets involved into helping these kids?
So that will depend on which job they're doing for us. We have therapists that have master's degrees and a lot of extra training on top of that to deal specifically with trauma and child abuse and things like that. It's a really specialized position with us. We also have bachelor-level mental health providers who have bachelor's degrees and then extended training in trauma and child abuse and family dynamics and things like that. On the forensic side, our medical provider went through about a year of specialty training. She was able to practice prior to that, but she didn't get really comfortable in the role until she had been doing it for a year, and she had preceptorships and training and really an extensive network of mentors. Our forensic interviewer has a bachelor's degree and some additional training in this work and specialized training called Oregon Forensic Interviewer Training.
Sarah Wickersham of Douglas Cares. More when we come back to interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson at 1. State Representative Virgil Osborne on Inside Douglas County at 1230. Taking a look at Douglas Care, Sarah Wickersham, the Executive Director. Let's kind of shift gears. You moved, well, I want to say new, but new building isn't probably really accurate. It's probably the kind of new building.
Well, it's still pretty new to us. It's only a year old. It was built from scratch for us. It was designed and built just for our needs. So yeah, it still feels very new to us. And it's a beautiful space, and it's holding up well. We're still incredibly grateful to Guy Kennerly for giving this build-to-suit opportunity, and we're loving the space.
What's it like, or what? How do you feel like you're more effective, or is it easier to work in this new environment versus where you were before?
The difference is that it's designed for the type of workflow that we have. So our family rooms are in the right place comparative to our forensic interview room, and we have an observation room that's larger and more comfortable. And then we have the building separated into two wings. So one wing is the forensic wing. We can control noise a little bit better, control confidentiality a little better. And then the other wing is the mental health department, where we still, recognize the importance of noise and confidentiality, but it's not quite the same as an active investigation.
So how many square feet do you have overall?
Oh, I...
you weren't
you put
expecting
me on
that
the
question.
Spot. I wasn't expecting that question. I believe it's 18,000.
So that's a lot of space.
I'll have to double check. I'm not certain on that. That's probably too big.
I don't think it's quite that big.
It's probably not that big. I think 9,000. It's 9,000 square feet. Sorry.
All right. That sounds more like it.
It's half of that.
So, but I mean, more space than you had, and to be set up more effective when you're trying to do this really tough work has got to really help.
Yeah, absolutely. And our other building was, it wasn't that much smaller, but there were large spaces that we couldn't actually use. So it ended up being a lot more usable space in the new building.
And let's see, folks, well, you mentioned that this was built specifically for you guys.
Yes, it was. Guy Kennerly offered us a build-to-suit option, and I still have... he asked me for a napkin sketch, and I used this roll of old newsprint that I probably got from here at one point. And I drew it out, and it was 5 feet long and a foot and a half, 2 feet deep. And I drew out everything that I wanted in this building. And he took that to the architects, and they made it all work really, really close to my original design, which I was very happy about.
And so you didn't know you had a future in architecture?
I did not. I have a backup career.
I actually used to, I had one point in life where I thought I had this really short window where I thought architecture might be something I wanted to do. And I actually drew house plans. I did dozens of house plans. And anybody who is a professional would just look at them now and laugh. Yeah, exactly. I think I had one that had the hallway around the entire house so that you could bicycle from room to room. So,
oh my God, I love it.
I don't know. But maybe it's best that we've taken the careers that we have. What about your current programs? Kind of give us an update on staffing and how things are going.
Yeah, so our family tree program is going strong. We've graduated a number of families from the program, which is a huge success in our book. Graduating from that program, families come into the program really on the verge of crisis with their children about to be placed in foster care. And we're able to step in and care for every member of the family and engage in really intensive service provision to keep those kids safe and at home so they don't undergo that additional trauma of family separation. And when we graduate them, that means that they no longer need any DHS supervision. So that means they've come all the way through, that they've gotten out of supervision with DHS, they're ready to be a whole family. And we continue to monitor. They're always able to come back and check in with us. But that program has been very successful, and we're all very proud of it. The other new program that we launched just this year was our Roots program, and that's for youth who have had a history of abuse and neglect, and have a co-occurring substance abuse concern. Not just substances, any kind of addictions. It can be electronics addictions, porn addictions, things like that. And those kids get treatment on all aspects of what might be going on with them, and we have special parent support part of that program because it's difficult to parent a teen who has some substance issues or addiction issues.
You mentioned, I think that's the first time somebody said electronics addiction.
Oh, yes, it's I don't have the stats with me because I wasn't prepared, but it is a huge problem among our kids right now, and it's impacting everything from their ability to learn to their ability to sit still. More of our kids are on medication than ever before, and giving them, you know, electronics to babysit them instead of engaging with them really, really impacts the way their brains develop. And it codes in there from the time that they're very young.
Well, and as we've obviously seen, and including Oregon, kind of a shift really happening this year with what schools do with those electronics and not having them be, you know, an in-your-face all-day thing.
Yeah, yeah, I was very happy. My youngest daughter wasn't, but I was very happy when the schools made the rule that no phones in class. You turn them in, or they stay in your backpack somewhere else, and if it comes out, they take it away from you. Very happy with that. It's a shame that it took this long to realize that that was not ideal for our kids, but I'm glad for the changes that are coming about.
Well, and I mean, as well, when you've got access to those, as everybody knows, you can go about anywhere down any not so good road very quickly.
Oh, yes, very much. And even those of us who tried very, very hard to put parental controls on their kids' phones, they're smarter than us. They can get around them. There isn't really a safe way to do that. So, yes, I agree. That's been challenging for our generations.
Do you feel like that's going to become, I mean, have you seen this tie into some of the other areas that you work with?
Yeah, there are quickly rising stats in online solicitation of minors, which means adults asking children for pictures or video chats of them naked, asking them to do things to themselves on camera, and even to the point of coercing them to hop a bus and come over to wherever the heck they are. There's also a brand new phenomenon called sextortion, where that scenario happens, where a child will send a picture, a nude picture or something like that, to one of these adults, and then the adult starts extorting goods, money, things like that, telling them that they are going to publish this picture, or they're going to get run in a lot of trouble with their parents or something like that. And it works. And unfortunately, it works to the degree that some children who have been involved in that have completed suicides because they didn't think there was any way out. So, yes, electronics are dangerous for kids.
Wow. About a minute left, and it's Douglas County. Now, you've got how many staff?
Oh, I think I've got 15 right now.
And in the type of work you're doing, is there people that you use as volunteers at all, or is that pretty much just limited to your board?
The board volunteers. We also have volunteer opportunities in events, in helping us put together fundraisers or things like that, pounding the pavement for soliciting donations. We have volunteer opportunities in this coming Monday. Actually, we're putting together food boxes for all of our clients, and we have de-identified the forms so that we can have outside volunteers help load those boxes, and then our staff will deliver them this coming Monday. So those kinds of things, we have volunteer opportunities for that kind of thing all the time.
And you had some kind of an event coming up too.
We do. We have our annual Strikes and Spares for Douglas Cares bowling event. That'll be March 3rd in 2026. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. Tickets are on sale right now. You can get those through our website. We're only selling lanes right now. We will open it up to individual tickets in January. But right now we're selling full lanes. And you can get a basic lane for $180. That's for six people. $300 buys you a regular lane plus some recognition. $500 buys you a cosmic lane with a lot of recognition as a sponsor.
Now, how do people get signed up for that?
Go to our website, www.douglascares.org. And we have a great big page on that website for Strikes and Spares, and you can interact with it and get all the information and buy your tickets straight through there.
All right. Sarah Wickersham of Douglas Cares, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.